Well, welcome to Redeem the Commute. I'm Ryan, your host for these daily challenges. We're in the middle of the week, so we've been looking at the topic of loving our neighbors and our enemies. When Jesus commanded his followers to love their enemies, he was finally making explicit something that had been implicit in his teaching on the Sermon on the Mount all along. We've seen examples in the last 17 weeks of ways that Jesus was teaching to love our enemies, saying things like, "Blessed are the merciful." We can look through and see all the ways he did that. But he's finally saying, in this particular teaching this week, what he'd been saying implicitly and giving us examples of all along. Love your neighbors and your enemies as yourself. You know, when God said, love your neighbor as yourself, he was setting, first of all, an exceedingly high standard. And it's one that's really hard for people of our generation. I grew up in that self-esteem culture, you know. I'm okay, you're okay, we're all special, we're all wonderful. There's nothing wrong, nobody can fail, everybody's perfect. And that makes it really hard for us to hear a lot of things in the Bible, but particularly here, the idea of loving our neighbor as ourself. Many of us have been taught that you should love no one as much as or even better than yourself. And yet the Bible has us loving God, first of all, and then loving our neighbors as ourselves. That's tough, it's exceedingly high, but there's also an exceedingly broad application of this. Not just saying love your neighbors of the same religion or love your neighbors who are related to you by blood as yourself. He's saying love your enemies as yourself too. So we've spent lots of time looking at the idea of neighbor and how people try to redefine neighbor, but sometimes we can try to get around this commandment as well by redefining love. Saying, oh, well, what does love mean? Well, there are three kinds of love that are described in the Bible. We use Greek words to define each of them. The first one is eros, that's erotic or sexual love. The next one is a family kind of love. And the third one is agape love. And that's the kind of love that you could have for a friend. And it's the kind of love that we most often see Jesus describing. And in this case, when he's saying, love your neighbors and your enemies, he's talking about an agape kind of love. Now he says, love your enemies. Doesn't say you have to like your enemies. Doesn't say you have to like what they're doing. You have to allow them to engage in criminal activity against you or something like that. What he's saying is love. Want the best for them. Want them to know God's love like you know God's love. Recognize them as created, beloved children of God who have fallen away from that, rebelled against him, and want better for them, want that relationship with God for them. Now, there are two objections that you might have thought up as you heard this passage, and one would be that Jesus is breaking his own commandment. He says we're supposed to love our neighbors and our enemies, and then he kind of takes a couple jabs at, first of all, tax collectors, and then at Gentiles, or pagans, non-Jewish people. Is Jesus basically breaking his own commandment here by poking a little fun at them, by saying, you know what, they do all these things, and you should be better than that? Well, in fact, what Jesus is doing there, in pointing out that the tax collectors do this and the Gentiles do that, is he's trying to actually poke the finger at the scribes and Pharisees and his followers and show them that their behavior, when they claim to be so much better, so much more religious than their neighbors or their enemies, that they're actually falling into the same kind of behavior that they claim to condemn. He's trying to teach them not just with his words, but also with examples. He, of course, wants his followers to live by a different standard, by a higher standard than even the most religious, the best people they know. So they don't need to compare themselves with the worst of the worst. They need to compare themselves with the most religious, the scribes and Pharisees, and Jesus wants them to even be better than that. Well, the second objection you might have thought of is, well, aren't there times in the Bible where there are very angry things said about others, that even the word hatred is used, that you know, people in Israel hate their enemies? And I think the best example we can look at would be from the Psalms. There are some Psalms that are very angry, that clearly come from a context of war, and say terrible things about the enemies of Israel. And you might say, well, what place does that have? Is that the same God as the God who teaches love your enemies? How does that work? Well, I think the important thing to recognize in a situation like those Psalms is that David, if he was the one writing it, or whoever wrote a particular psalm that might say hateful things about their enemies isn't writing for himself, from a personal standpoint. Rather, as one of God's prophets, he's writing for God. And God does have that right and that ability to hate our behavior, to hate the ways we have destroyed his good world, the ways we destroy others, and the ways we've rebelled against him. He's the only one who can really do that, because he only stands on a perfect foothold of holiness and perfection. That's his right, not ours. So if God wants to say he's angry, he can. And if God wants to say he hates the things we do to his world, or to ourselves, or to others, he can do that too. But we have a question for you to consider today, either alone or with a group if you're working with one. What sort of thoughts or feelings come into your mind and heart when you consider that person, you know, your enemy? Agape love is an unconquerable kind of benevolence and invincible desire. What might that practically look like in relation to that person in your life, that enemy, when you're having a hard time? Have a great discussion. I'll see you tomorrow.